You know, I was going to say hello and welcome to the San Carlos Computer Club, but with your computer typing in the background, I thought the sound effects were really cool. I'm Scott Stimson, and I'm here with my daughter, Bibi.
Hi!
We're here to do the intro, mostly because I do a computer club each week.
And I'm always here to do the intro each week.
I was hoping you would say, and I'm not.
Well, it's too bad now. I got discombobulated.
Discombobulated. That's the word of the day. Bibi and I are getting together. We're working on our other podcast, and it's not working. So we decided to take a moment and record the intro for the San Carlos Computer Club.
Woo!
Bibi, what do you like about the San Carlos Computer Club? Be nice.
You got me at be nice. We're nerds unite.
Say that again?
We're nerds unite.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
It looks like our other podcast is starting to come together, doesn't it, Bibi?
Barely.
Barely.
Tech on.
So we're a little late putting out the San Carlos Computer Club, mostly because I wanted to save my time to do this intro with Bibi.
Yay!
Club. And what follows is the meeting we had last Saturday, September 5th. Thanks for your interest in Tech On.
Tech On!
Well, I'm going to put Photoshop.
Okay, Scott.
Yes, sir.
Add on your list. I'm really interested in some kind of picture organizing program. One that, you know, like goes in and looks at my several thousand photographs and will delete or tag the duplicates and get like give me an ability to organize it in some fashion, preferably free.
Well, I would be happy to tell you what I've done because I have literally hundreds of them, and most of them that I had digitized from 35 millimeter slides.
So, but I think what you're looking for is something that would like look at thumbnails of photos and allow you to organize them into folders, albums.
Yeah. It would be a photo organizer that allows me to look at dive into these things and come up with some kind of organization that, other than just my files in sequential order, that I have to go back through and find.
Especially
eliminate the duplicates.
Yeah, in this regard, I can tell you what I did do, and you may not want to do it, but this is the way I managed it. I set up every year from 1957 when I got my first camera to 2020, and every year I set up a folder for every year, and then I started feeding photographs into those years, and then in some years I had so many photographs I had to have subsequent folders within a year to organize for example a particular trip or a particular party. And that's the way I did mine, and it was not a program that I got off the internet. It was my own setup.
It's just your own file system.
My own file system, correct.
All right.
That's what
I'm going online. 3.
Uh-oh.
2, 1.
There goes the organization.
There you go. Well,
you're gone.
In case everything blows up, I hope I'm still there. Am I still here?
No, there's just a big atomic bomb cloud in your place.
Please hold on.
Maybe.
Please stand by.
Oh, here we go.
What?
You know, Scott, you don't even have to announce when you're going online. We can tell.
You can tell? Does everything just...
It's equivalent. Scott's equivalent to the blue screen of death.
That's right. All of a sudden, I'm just a computer icon. Well, we're still not really starting for another few minutes, but I did start the YouTube stream, so I want you to know that we are online.
Judy has joined us.
Good morning, Judy. Did you see my graphic from last week's meeting?
Unmute, Judy.
Can you hear us, Judy?
I can.
Did you see my graphic from last week's meeting?
Yes, we can.
I did.
It's a tribute to your TV series. Say again.
So today it's going to be 91 degrees here in Colorado. And on Tuesday night, it's going to drop to 28.
Yep.
I saw that.
We're doing the same thing in Celsius. It's our long weekend here. It's Labor Day weekend. And today, I would think we're going to be 25-ish, somewhere around there. And the high for Monday, the actual holiday day, is 9 degrees Celsius.
With a chance of snow in a lot of places in Alberta.
Yeah, we have a chance of snow, too. I'm trying to figure out what I should do with my sprinkler. It's not one of those that you can easily
wow
drain.
28 degrees.
Yeah, from,
but that's from 90 something,
right? Yeah.
91 today.
91 here in Oregon. I think that's the cold front that is coming toward you.
I don't know where it's coming from. I can't seem to see a weather map that shows me that.
If it's cold, blame Canada.
It's Canada's fault.
Yeah,
well, that extreme drop in temperature is like something from a disaster environmental movie. It's some blockbuster of how the Earth's going to freeze over.
Well, that's what the U.S. Open is on right now as well.
Say that again, Judy?
The U.S. Open is on tennis.
Oh, okay. They're going to switch into flannel by next.
In Colorado,
with trapdoors. Flannel underwear with trapdoors.
In the Colorado Mountains, when I've lived there, you could have snow in September and you could also have it in July.
Yeah, that's amazing. There are places in Alaska like that. Not places I lived, but there are.
I see Maggie.
Good morning, Maggie.
Morning, Maggie. Where's the sparkly hat? Come on.
Where's her ball cap?
That's the one I'm talking about.
You're speaking
of muted, Maggie.
I decided to wash my hair this morning. So what am I missing?
So Irving be on today because he went fishing and it's about 40 degrees up there this morning.
Where is this?
In Homer.
40 degrees sounds good about now.
Yeah, Judy was just saying that it's going to be 91 today and 28 by, was it tomorrow?
Tuesday.
That's an extreme temperature change. Today here in San Carlos, it's supposed to be over 100 degrees, like 102 degrees.
And humidity, 88%?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we had a day that was 91 degrees, and with humidity, it felt like 116.
Oh.
So, you know, they've opened just about everything up around here. There's bars open. There's clubs open.
Have you been out, Scott? Have you been anywhere?
No. I mean, my whole Mexican family has had enough, you know, enough deaths around us that we're all pretty not in a hurry to go hang out indoors anywhere. I'm just amazed at the. I mean, I feel bad for the people that have the establishments because they need to. I mean, nothing's changed. Capitalism's still driving everything, and if you're not working, then you can't live. And so, I mean, I recognize that they need support and they need. But we were never going out to those places. For us, what we're missing out is family events, well, and funerals. The, I mean, it's just those kinds of gatherings are what we're missing out on that we would normally be part of. That and going to the movie theater occasionally, and once in a while going out to eat out. And it's just,
so
it's
have
just
more of the people that you know have died than Scott.
Well, you know, in the same manner as I said before, we have, I guess I'm only aware of one family member in my Mexican family that has, I hope this is still true, because if not, then I haven't been paying attention. But there's only been one family member within like two arm lengths from any one of us that has passed away. But there is a whole slew of secondary family and friends that have friends of family. So they're not people that I directly interact with. I mean, actually, it's kind of odd for me to be talking like this because what I should say is we've seen a steady decline in infections in this area. Which to me is an indicator that people are following the rules and being cautious, just like my Mexican family is. And I started talking about this because you asked if I was going out. And all this is just to say, no, there's absolutely no reason to take any additional risk when things are happening successfully around here. I mean, you can get sick around here now. There's hospital beds for people.
Right.
Yeah. So you know, I had heard that... San Carlos lost five captains.
Yeah, that would. I didn't realize that it was up to five. I knew that. I knew of two.
I heard about.
I don't recall their names, but whoever told me about it, I didn't know them specifically, even though I knew a lot of the captains.
Yeah, and so I don't know any of these people that have passed away, but I'm related to people that know these people that have passed away. And the last time I did a count was a couple of weeks ago. It was about 2 weeks ago. And it seems like it was up to 11. And it included people from the marina. These are people that my people interact with every day that have passed away. Some folks' parents passed away. And yeah, and all COVID related. So there's enough of it, and we've had family members. My Mexican family that have gotten sick and had it run their course through. I mean nobody died from that, but they are of the nature you don't want to get sick with it. And there is people, I mean, all this is just flooding back. I wasn't thinking about any of this stuff till just now, so I'm just kind of riffing on COVID. They have continually come back to tell us that they feel like they're dealing with symptoms, and they may be mild, but they're fairly certain that they didn't have anything like what they feel like now after having gone through being infected. And they're not old people. They're not, some of them do have pre-existing conditions, but I mean, these are people that are around my age. One that's younger. No, three that are younger. Anyway, on that happy note, I do want to say that the infection rates around here are down, and that there are hospital beds. If you do get sick, they want you to go to the doctor and I mean, go through treatment, get it recorded. And that's a good thing. And what that means is that people around here have been taking it seriously and they've been following the rules and they've been preventing infections. So right alongside the things are opening up, the rate of infection is going down, and that's exactly the way you should be doing it. This is the San Carlos Computer Club on that somber note. We meet every Saturday at 9. I'm Scott Stimson, and I do IT work online. And I might be going back out into the field shortly if this continues to happen. If we continue to have a decline in infections, I might find myself once again going in, going on site to do work. But until then, I am available here online. I can do remote work. And if you're looking for any help for your computer issues, please get a hold of me. This is the San Carlos Computer Club, and we get together every Saturday to talk about tech topics. And in traditional fashion, I'm obviously rambling and don't actually have an agenda. I do have some topics I brought with me, and we've been meeting earlier and talking about things to add to the topic list. And one of the things I wanted to do just right off the top of the hour is ask you guys for any recommendations that you've come across in the last week that you're interested in, you think we might be interested in. And not limited to technology. It could be books or movies, or again, tech topics that you're ready to share with us that you want to discuss more. Is there anybody out there that has a piece of software they've been using recently or a website that they think we should all know about?
No.
No. Say that again.
I'm in San Carlos.
Hey, Linda's back. All right. Get ready for over 100 degree weather today.
Well, we went out to dinner last night at Tortugas, and there is so many Mexicans here. The traffic at night is really bad.
Well, it's a holiday weekend.
No, every weekend, according to Jim and Lydia, it's just like you would not believe how many. They're just taking over the country club.
They're renting these places because they have nobody in them. This time period, you know what it is? It's not. It's Independence weekend, Independence Day.
Yeah, it is. It's a holiday weekend.
Yeah.
Independence Day on September the 5th?
Well, for some reason, I'm thinking it's supposed to be on the 16th.
Yeah.
So they have on the 16th.
I read something about it, that it was somehow they've moved it and don't count on being off on the 16th.
Well, thank you for saying that, because my wife keeps saying Sunday, and I haven't really paid attention to the date, but so I've disassociated it, but Independence Day is on the 16th. She keeps talking about Sunday as when we're doing a celebration. So I'm assuming
that someplace, yes.
Yeah, so I'm assuming it's the 6th that this is happening. And this is supposed to be a grito when they meet in the streets and they yell Viva Mexico. It's a big celebration. But I'm not aware of anything happening. We're doing our own celebration in our home. We'll probably meet with other family members from our bubble of people that we've been trying to keep our social distancing bubble down. But that's why there's so many people in town. Well, outside of tourism and COVID, we do have some tech topics.
Scott?
Yes, Bill.
You were talking about Poldark, so I pulled up Streamio, and it's on Streamio. You can play all the seasons on it, I think.
It's totally available on Streamio.
Yeah.
Great. I'm going to be done with it before I go south. I'm sure I'm at season me right now, so I'm going to be done.
It's been a fun topic to return to for various reasons. So.
It is.
And it gave me the opportunity to build this fancy graphic for last week's meeting. Hey, Fred.
And now everybody knows why I watch it.
What's that?
I said, now everybody knows why I watch it after you see the star.
Oh, well, I almost put the shirtless picture on there.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, I don't know if I want to disappoint people that are curious. They're going to click on it and then hear us.
Right. So, back onto a non-computer topic, it's the Balloon Fest here. So normally they all take off from one central location, and this year they've spread it over the community.
Oh, that's interesting. So it would encourage social distancing, just physical distancing.
Well, they didn't even announce where they were going to take off. So it was like if you saw them, you were lucky.
Right, right. So it wouldn't encourage crowds or any events around them. That's exactly. Interesting. What was it? There was an activity that they were doing in New York where they had done it was the fireworks.
Right.
During the 4th of July, they did that, didn't they? They set them off in random locations, predetermined random locations around the town that they didn't, or the city that they didn't inform the citizens. So they could have fireworks, but they wouldn't be encouraging gatherings. Interesting. It's an interesting time period we're living in. It's like we're all learning new rules.
I think we're all, or a lot of us are learning new computer skills and new ways to communicate that I think are going to be good. Like the schools here, they've now gotten something from T-Mobile that the school buses for rural areas are going to now be mobile hotspots.
Oh, wow.
And so they're going to be able to pull out to most of these locations, and the kids can either go in the bus or they can gather outside the bus to have internet.
No, that's very cool. The lack of internet will really affect whether they're able to get online and how they do it. The libraries, I was seeing something in the Fairbanks University Library, and they'd had to shut it down for some extensive cleaning period. And the article is really talking about what a resource it is, just specifically for that, to have a study space that has internet access for students that don't have access.
Maybe this will be seen sometime in the future as a utility, like we talked about, maybe like electric or water or gas in some places, that it will be seen more like a utility than a luxury.
What an interesting idea. I think the same way. It can flip because of education, because of what we're having to do with education and healthcare. If you think about the telemedicine that's going on right now, I mean, it could really flip the whole conversation. All of a sudden, both items could end up being affordable and very technically robust, whereas before they haven't been.
Exactly.
Medication is really going to be good.
Are you saying that because so many of us will need to be medicated for the future?
by the same token, those of us that are retired, it's just an easier deal than someone who's working and trying to raise a family.
Yeah. 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 I'm curious. Here's a question for you guys. Is anybody getting medication through US Post and has seen a change in the availability because of all this weird postal stuff that's been going on?
Yeah. I've been ordering supplements, both from Costco and from Amazon with no problem. And it comes to your front door and you're done.
So the whole thing of the U.S. Postal Service delays and machines shutting down hasn't affected any of that for you?
Well, it has. In one respect, I mailed a letter to my sister, and it had a check in it, and it never arrived.
Oh, that's
I get mine from VA, and I haven't noticed any problems. The VA is notoriously slow to start with.
I don't know if that's good or bad, Fred. So it's no worse than it's ever been.
I can't blame it on the post office.
I see Sandy's on, but her video's shut off.
Morning, yeah. Mom.
Marty, that's on purpose. I'm saving you guys this morning. I'm the only one up. I don't know what Terry, he's still sleeping. He's been having a rough week of sleep, so we're kind of out of it. But I didn't want to miss listening to you all. Just one comment on the post office. Up here, what we've noticed of our personal mail, it arrives, we don't know when during the day. Used to be right around 4 o'clock it would arrive. We'd go down and get the mail. Sometimes it arrives at 3. Sometimes it arrives at 8. It's just all over the place. And I can't help but think that that's got to have something to do with the problems the post offices are having now. And about whether mail gets delivered or not delivered, but sent from your house. We've taking ours right to the mailbox because there's been problems with it disappearing. Not ours, but we're hearing about mail disappearing. Now, that may not be Trump's problem. That may be, opportunists going up and down our alley where all of our mailboxes are.
Well, yeah, that could be just economic disparage in Anchorage, right? Because of where we're at with jobs and resources.
Yeah. So it's unpredictable here right now.
Hey, do you have any recommendations for this week? You're an avid TV movie watcher. You got anything we should all know about, Mom?
Oh, geez. I can't seem to get past MSNBC. I am so limited. Sorry. No, I don't have anything new to offer right now.
Nothing new. You know what Yuya and I just started recently is a Stephen King on HBO called The Outsider. Have any of you been watching that? It starts out very subtle, and by the time you're halfway through it, it's gotten just very bizarre. It's got a supernatural twist to it. It's put together by Jason Bateman.
Oh, he's good.
Yeah, and he actually stars in the first episode, but he's written a lot of it from what I can tell from watching the credits, and he produced, I think he's the producer on the whole thing. But it's an easy recommendation, and it's Stephen King, so you know it's going to be weird, but in a Stephen King kind of weird.
Bill and I have been watching The Umbrella Academy, and...
love it! Love it! My daughter and I are super fans.
I've been watching Breaking Bad.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Second time or the third?
For the second time or the third?
Yeah, Chester, I am too. I don't know why, but I it's the third time I've watched it. And I really do not like Walter White. I did at first, but not anymore.
He's a bad guy. But,
he's very bad.
One of the best ones we have watched is Outlander. And unfortunately, we've watched all of them, so we have to wait for a new series.
It'll start up again one of these days.
Of course, Yellowstone, you know.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Umbrella, what?
Yellowstone's another one that we started, thought it was pretty good, never got back to it.
Is it coming back, Yellowstone?
Yes, they announced just this week that they're signed up with NBC for next year.
Well, we were watching Republic of Doyle, but down here we can't get it.
Now, look at this. I asked you at the top of the hour for recommendations, and now I've got a whole list of things to watch.
Cheryl.
Have you tried Eureka?
I love Eureka. Yeah, you're talking about the sci-fi Eureka?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big fan. It's too bad they couldn't continue that show, but I think there's like 5 seasons of it, right?
Yes, there is.
Judy asked, what is the Umbrella Academy? Judy, it's a science fiction one, but all these children were born on the same day, and they have superpowers.
Oh, and good.
It's quite the interesting. So they're a family, but they aren't. So I can see Scott and his daughter watching it lots.
Oh, it's, yeah, we're super fans of it. My daughter gets so excited by it. What was that?
Cheryl and I are waiting patiently for the next season of Space Force.
Yeah, you know, we didn't finish it. We need to get back to it. It was so dry to begin with. It didn't hook us, but I hear good things about it. So I got to get back to it.
We blitzed the whole thing. You know,
we binged it.
Yeah.
We binged the whole thing, and then it's done. The other one I'm trying to get, and I see that it's been released, but I haven't found it on anything I can watch it, is Why Women Kill.
Oh, I haven't even heard of that.
Boy, do we need to get some lessons there?
Yeah, it's a lot about husbands.
I was going to say, here's the recommendation going out to the guys.
Block Why Women Kill.
Yeah. But it's got some really,
to all you married and engaged fellows out there, this is a good documentary to help you along your way.
If you don't wake up one morning, here's why.
It's also the series that we have watched on the English Crown. I can't remember the name of it, but you could probably check and find it.
Is it called The Crown?
On the Queen of England.
I think it was called The Crown.
The Crown, yeah.
The Crown, yeah.
And I watched quite a few of them. I can't remember where I am with the series.
They're largely tied in with history. I mean, very historic.
Yeah, it was really well done, I thought.
Yeah.
Has anyone done great? Wait a minute. Catherine the Great. We're finding it, I think it's on Hulu. It's called The Great. It's really silly, but it's the spirit of it is trying to kind of open your eyes to how ridiculous court was back then, and how she, a German girl, got to be Catherine the Great. So it's something that you can work on your computer and kind of follow. It's beautiful. The costumes and everything are beautiful. So I would say that's sort of a no-brainer kind of thing to watch when you're doing other things.
I would say the best that we have watched, though, is Outlander.
And Outlander.
If that's on your list, Scott. But
you know, we've tried Outlander before, and for me, it was just too slow. I mean, but I'm not being fair, because I know they're deep into it now. They've got like 5 seasons of that now, don't they? Yeah, and I really gave up on it real early. I think I watched the first 3 episodes, and like, I can see why people like this, but this is not really what I'm looking for. But
we thought it was time, but it opened up, and we really enjoyed it finally.
Yeah, some of these shows, it's amazing how, like, what was the one I was just mentioning that we just, The Outsider. So this is a show, Stephen King. If I were to base how good the show is on the first episode, I never would have gotten through. I would never have gotten to where I am now. It's so much like reading a book where you just can't. You have no idea where you're going just reading the first chapter. It's the setup is just happening all the way through the flow of the show. So there's good bits here and there, but by the time you're on the 3rd episode, you're just sucked into this world. And I suspect shows like Outlander are like that, where you got all the background, you got the appendices, and now you really can just get after the meat of it.
Either that, or you've committed so much time to it, you know that you need to finish it.
Well, you know, I heard a commentator the other day saying you have to allow yourself not to finish books. And I feel the same way about TV shows. It's like at some point, it's a waste of time. You've only got so much time. It's the most precious currency you have in your world is time. So don't feel bad about not finishing books. Toss them aside. If it's no good, why waste your time?
Scott, have you tried?
I do have the opposite, though. I think if you start a book that's been recommended by somebody, that maybe there is something good in it. You just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
So I end up finishing a lot of books that really are... I should have thrown them down.
See, I don't know if you're actually giving me advice or is this a support group for readers that won't quit? Hi, my name's Scott Stimson, and I read crappy novels to the end.
It's just like you don't write in a book, you don't mark on a map, you don't do any of those kind of things.
Yeah.
So you read the book when you start it.
Fred, I'm sorry. What is it you're trying to chime in with?
Oh, have you tried Longmire?
Oh, yes.
Longmire?
We're in the fourth season now. That's what we've been doing, Longmire.
Yeah. Is it a cowboy show?
Sort of modern cowboy.
Okay.
Yeah.
A cowboy sheriff.
I don't drift that way. I'm much more spaceships and ray guns than I am in superheroes.
So you aren't in Knights Templar and things like that, because
I do like some of that stuff. I like King Arthur stuff. Game of Thrones.
The Last Kingdom. It's about Alfred the Great.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've watched some of that. That is really good. Vikings. That's good stuff too.
Yeah. What was the name of that?
The Last Kingdom. The Last Kingdom. And then there's one on King Fall. It's about, the Last Kingdom is about Alfred, and then King Fall is about Knights Templar.
I'm just looking at my list of things here. That's awesome. I've just got a new list of things to go through. One of the things I guess you were just mentioning something you could put in the background. This is really the recommendation list I need. It's something you can put in the background and follow while you're getting things done. I end up watching a lot of really bad sci-fi because it's just so very easy to keep my thought over there and get work done at the same time, whatever it is I might be doing. The worst thing I could get is all these great recommendations. Like, you can't just watch a show like The Umbrella Academy. You've got to focus on it and suck it in, or this Outsider that we've just started watching. I can't try and do work at the same time. I can't do either. I don't get good work done, and I don't understand what the story is. So what we really need is a recommendation list of B material, not A material, but B material that is entertaining enough to put on in the background, but I can still do the other kind of stuff, other kind of work I want to do. And for that list, you can include sci-fis like Killjoys. What else can I think of that's just really good B material?
Bob? SpongeBob.
Oh, SpongeBob. Yeah, that's a good one. Oh, Wee Bear Bears is a good, 7 to 10 minute cartoon that's really fun, easy to follow. Oh, any of the superhero stuff on the CW, The Flash, The Green Arrow, it's called Arrow. If you like superheroes at all, it's just really easy to have that stuff rolling in the background. They've got a lot of funny one-liners in it, and it's not hard to follow the plot. And you feel no commitment to it. Like, if you missed something, you're not even rewinding it. You're just going on to the next thing.
Mm. How about Johnny Quest?
Oh, you got to pay attention to Johnny Quest.
Well, I'm a history buff, and so I lean towards anything that is historical.
Time team.
I think documentaries are the hardest for me. If I put a documentary on, I switch from whatever work I'm doing to a researcher, and I'm complimenting on a secondary screen anything that I'm seeing in this documentary. Like,
documentaries are good fillers.
Say that again, and Chester?
Documentaries are good fillers.
Yeah.
You need to waste an hour. And I find the best ones are coming off the Smithsonian channel.
Oh, okay.
I really like that channel.
Hey, you know what we've watched recently? Are you guys familiar with this new service, Quibi or Quibi? I think it's called Quibi. I have not partaken in the service at all. Quibi. But they were billing themselves as a new age Netflix. It's a subscription service. I haven't gotten into it at all. But what I've ended up doing is I've ended up getting into some shows that they're premiering. And
how do you spell that? How do you spell it?
I'm looking it up right now. TV streaming. In typical computer club format, I didn't know I was going to be talking about this. And so I don't have it in front of me. And I haven't used... Oh, it's Quibi. And it's a service that you pay a subscription to. But one of their features is that their episodes are... How did I do that? That's not where I'm supposed to be. Their episodes are broken into 7-minute chunks.
Ooh, I like that.
And so it's really kind of addressing this new format, this kind of TikTok generation, this YouTube generation, trying to get them back involved in these long shows. So one of the shows that we've watched from beginning to end, just in 7-minute blocks, one after another, is The Fugitive. And this is based on the old Fugitive TV program and the movies that followed after that. And it was really good. And one of the things that I found interesting about the format was when you have an episode that's 7 minutes long, you can do a lot of stuff real quick. And when you move on to the next episode, it doesn't need to pick up right from... It doesn't have to be just chopped in 7 chunks. They can approach it episodically. So they can have a new... beginning, they can come at it from a different point of view. They can jump before the 7 minutes you just watched or into the future.
Yeah.
I'm sorry? Is somebody talking to me? No?
I had one more recommendation. It's called Hell on Wheels.
Oh, yeah. I'm one. Yeah, that's historical also.
Yeah.
It's historic. About the railroad, building the railroad.
And it has to do with the Irish. The Hell on Wheels was actually an event, and it was the Irish going the road from east to west. And of course, the road coming from the west to the east was all done by Chinamen.
Well,
we've managed to watch that twice. It's really good, that whole series.
Well, you know, the Hell on Wheels was an actual railroad car that moved from spot to spot, and it was a whorehouse in real life.
On Wheels is the building of the Transcontinental Railroad.
Yep, and they were building it from east to west.
Thank you.
I've watched some of that. My wife has watched all of it. I know my parents have, too.
Twice.
We went away from it for a while. I'm not sure if we ever finished or where we were, but there were some interesting characters in that one.
If you found yourself using Streamio to take advantage of some of these shows, then I bet that you're going to start running across some Quibi shows, some Quibi-produced shows. And they're these 7-minute And actually, The Fugitive was really a good one to watch it with. Streamio did everything it was supposed to correctly. It allowed us to pick, you know, it searched for a source, and we clicked on the source, and we started watching it. And it, immediately after it finished, it picked up another source and just went on to the next episode. And so it made it very easy to go one by one by one through these. I assume the way the app does it, but Streamio had done it for us.
Scott, if we've exhausted this subject, I and Sandy's on, I can talk about Photoshop.
Yeah, let's, you know, Mom, last time we were talking with Chester about a problem with his Photoshop, and we were talking about this morning. Apparently, the Photoshop answer is to subscribe to the new version of Photoshop, but Chester has found a solution to his problem on Windows 10.
I have to say that I wasted a lot of time, I mean days, working on this problem. I have both Windows called CS5 and the Windows CF6 programs. And I have taken them off the computer. I put them back on the computer.
Did you tell us that you were having the same problem on both programs?
Both programs. And one of my CS5, in order to reinstall it, I had to go to
the company.
Yes, I had to go to the company and turn my computer over to them so they could reinstall it, because they lost the track of my purchases through the period of years. Okay, that's an aside problem that took extra time.
Yeah, but it's really kind of reassuring to know that you could go to them, because the CS5 and the CS6, I think, are pretty old programs now.
That's what I was thinking.
They don't support them anymore, but they will help you. And they will not help me with this problem.
So they verified that you were suffering from the problem.
Yeah.
And then gave you the solution to subscribe monthly to Photoshop.
They gave me the link of a forum where I might find the answer. And of course, I went to that forum and did not find the answer, just the problem. But I kept searching, and I finally did find the problem. And if you're looking at Windows 10, okay, you bring up settings, and then system,
hey,
and then display.
Chester, I'm sorry, I missed that. You go into settings, and then what's next? I don't know if it's just me or if everybody, but you're cutting in and out for me, and so I'm having trouble hearing you.
Yeah. Okay. Go to settings.
Settings.
The system.
System.
Display.
Display.
Okay. Scroll down, and it'll say scale and layout.
Ah. Okay.
And 200 is recommended.
200 is recommended?
Right. That's the problem.
Because it's scaling up your display, and you have, of course, it's your problem, because you have a program that was written before we had 4K monitors. And so it's scaling up so that Windows looks attractive on your display, but then your program doesn't know how to deal with that.
That's correct.
That makes a lot of sense.
And it only, apparently it only affects the program.
So Chester, in that thinking, what did you do? How did you use that knowledge to solve your problem?
Okay, the way I use that knowledge is that if I have a photograph or something,
Linda, Janet is calling me. Could you call her?
Thank you, Cheryl. Hey, Jim, we're going to mute your microphone, man.
Whoops, sorry, man.
That's probably why it's been cutting in and out, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Cheryl.
What I'm so far, the way I'm getting around it, if I have a photograph and I want to do some very close erasing, like background erasing, then I have to change the setting on Windows 10 to 100% rather than 200%.
So, and to be clear, what that does is it makes your taskbar and all your icons much smaller and harder to see.
Including Photoshop.
Including Photoshop. I mean, almost unusable, like yes. Little tiny icons.
Yes.
So.
Thank you.
I've not found a way around that.
Okay, so Chester, here's the new thing to play with, because with that knowledge, I understand where to go. Let me open up Present now. I want to show you something that you, some of you may be aware of this, but you can control those scaling features. Let me, which screen am I going to? There we go. So you can take, I don't know if you can see my screen. Can people see my screen now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you can take any application. I'm going to take a copy of any desk here and click on it with the right mouse button. This is all Windows 10. So you don't do this on a Macintosh, and you go to Properties, and under Properties, there's compatibility in the tabs. And now here's the thing that is all over the board. These settings in the lower half of this compatibility window are all about your resolutions on your screen. And this change high DPI settings, I don't have good instructions. Any given application may behave differently. But I would play with each one of these. I would turn it on. This one right here, program DPI, this checkbox. Use this setting to fix scaling problems. That'd be the first one I would start with. So you would go in.
I've tried all of these.
Oh, you've done all these already. And none of these resolve the problem.
None resolve the problem.
And the high DPI overscaling, this didn't solve the problem either.
Right. And you can change it from application to system. And they all produce something different, but none of them solved the problem.
None of them solved the eraser problem. Okay, well, that's good to know. Well, then forget all of this.
I tried everything there.
Well, that's excellent. At least you have a workaround.
I have a workaround.
I can give you another very cryptic way to do this, but you could install a virtual machine specifically for your version of Photoshop. You could run a virtual box and put a copy of Windows XP in that, and then run Photoshop from that box. And nowadays we have computers that have enough power that it really wouldn't affect you too badly. You could, in the past, it wouldn't have been a favorable way to do things because it would take so much capacity of your computer. But your Macintosh would be able to run a virtual machine of Windows running Photoshop. And so that'd be another way to deal with it. It's a clunky way to deal with it, but it's no more clunky than changing your whole display. And you'd be able to see your icons. It would be there every time you started it. You'd be able to see your icons correctly.
Well, fortunately, with this big screen, I can see the icons when everything is shrunk.
Yeah.
But on my laptop, I don't think I'd be able to.
Right. Yeah, that big Macintosh, the iMac display really makes it easier to see the icons at a smaller size.
Right. Tiny.
Yeah, tiny. It's because of these 4K monitors. I've got a 4K monitor on my laptop. My laptop display is 13 inches. I have to bring it down to at least a 2K display, and that's with scaling up. My scaling up was 300%. Now my scaling up is 200% because I've brought it down to a 2K display. But anything that was written before Windows 10 comes out just in tiny, tiny, very difficult to see.
I don't remember having this problem when I first started using Windows 10. It's only recently that I've run into this problem, and it's been some change that Windows has made, some upgrade.
You're absolutely right, Chester, but I think that it's probably disingenuous to say that, because you have been suffering from the problem of the manufacturer not updating this software from the moment they went to subscription services. And right. That's the real problem that you're dealing with, is that they're not, we're going into the future with a modern operating system that needs and wants changes and fixes, but the people that made that software are not doing it. And
yeah, I wonder if it affects any other program. Older programs.
Oh, definitely. Definitely would. And it would prompt developers to make changes to those programs, or like Adobe's doing, point you towards their new services. It's like, look, we're not fixing these things. This is the reason you buy the new version. QuickBooks is a good example. Intuit uses any excuse for you to have to buy the latest version of their software. It's expensive software, and that's their cash cow. And every time Microsoft makes a Windows update, and to be fair, I know they have a Windows 10 version. I don't think any of these updates have broken their QuickBooks version since they've gone to Windows 10. But definitely when we went from Windows 2000, when we went from Windows XP to Windows 7, you had to buy a new QuickBooks version. There was just no way around it. When 7 went to 8, you had to buy a new QuickBooks version.
I'm not blaming Windows. I'm blaming Photoshop, Adobe.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, it's kind of hard to blame anyone when you run an old software. I think I would blame Adobe for just not, I mean, if they're not going to fix these things, then why not make it open source? Why not let other people maintain it? Because there's definitely a constituent of people out there that are fans and have been using this software, and they'd figure out how to fix these problems if they had access to it.
Okay, I don't want to belabor this, but one more point is that a week or two ago, you recommended a cheaper free version that was a substitute for Photoshop.
Free and is cheaper.
Yeah, cheaper. And I downloaded that program, and it worked correctly. The only problem is I couldn't figure out how to enlarge the picture. In other words, so that you could really work up close if you're doing some erasing.
Like any of these alternatives to Photoshop, they're going to have their own ways of working.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've gotten to really enjoy using GIMP, which is a free open source photo manipulator, and it supports layers, and it does everything that I might want Photoshop to do, but it's called GIMP. But Chester, let me say, it does everything Photoshop would do in a GIMP way. And so it's a relearning of all your skills to do exactly the same thing you're doing with Photoshop. I have a lot of trouble trying to move somebody that has Photoshop skills into a version of GIMP, because for me, it was a whole new learning experience. Right down to the language that's used in the command menus. I mean, it's hell. It would be hell for somebody that's seasoned on Photoshop to switch over to GIMP, because the way you do processes are different. I'll tell you, one of the ones that drives me crazy in GIMP is that you select a layer, not an object, but a layer, and it's got pull handles on it, but you can't move it around. You can't change the size of it unless you have the scaling tool selected. You can't move it around on your canvas unless you have the move tool selected, Whereas intuitively, you look at it, and it's like it's highlighted. I can grab it and drag it. No, I can't. I can't grab it and drag it to do anything. I have to grab it and then go over and select the tool I'm going to do something with it. So there's all these little things that are not done in a Photoshop way, that are done in a GIMP way, that would... That one that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that Photo P.
Yes, that's the one. That's the one.
Yeah, and that one, they did a really good job of mimicking how Photoshop works. And so you could take your Photoshop skills and go use that application.
The only problem I ran into is I couldn't increase the size, enlarge. But I'm going to work on that some more because it's not a little program.
Yeah, yeah, Chester, if you find yourself using that program more and more, and you, Mom, too, if you find yourself using, trying out this Photoshop clone, let's continue, update us with new features that you can do with it.
And the eraser works.
And the eraser works, that's right. You don't have to change the scaling of your screen.
Well, remind me how we get to that. To have forgotten.
Yeah, the link, it is a web page. It's Photo P, like green peas.
Oh, P-E-A.
Yeah. Photo P.com. And when you go to it, photop.com, you don't need an account. It loads the application right into the web browser. Everything's done from the web browser. You can have an account. They have an account system. I'm sure they would like you to use it, but there's no need to. And you can save, change, bring in files. It looks like it's fully functional. And the way the developer makes money off of it is while you're in this web browser, advertising comes up. And he's making some ridiculous 3 or 6 figure a month on advertising, or yearly. I'm sorry, year, not month, yearly. He's making like $250,000 a year just off advertising because of the number of hours, the sheer number of hours people are on this app working on photos. So
you can buy one without you can pay for one without the apps.
You know, I didn't see anything like that, but I wouldn't be surprised if they, I mean, no, there's an app on mobile that you can download. So I'm sure they're thinking in those are the pretty standard monitoring systems is doing stuff like that. I just haven't seen anything like that. One of the key features that I think isn't obvious is that you can... Bill, is that you?
I think I just came back on.
We lost you for a moment.
Am I there now?
Yeah, you're here now.
Okay.
One of the features that was interesting about it is after it's loaded into the web browser, you don't need internet. All the tools have come with it. So you can work with it offline, which is an interesting aspect of it, which means that you could dump it into a framework and make it an application on your computer. It's a progressive web app.
Hey, Scott.
Yes,
I downloaded GIMP the other day.
Yes.
I needed to crop a picture. That's all I needed to do. It took me about an hour and a half to figure out how to crop a picture successfully in GIMP.
Yes.
I just downloaded Photo P and cropped it in about 4 seconds.
Yeah, you see, Chester, that's the point I'm making. Bill's making it now, too. If you've got Photoshop experience, GIMP is not the program you're looking for.
Yeah, I need to spend more time on the one that Bill mentioned. I've used it just once, but I... Now that I understand what's going on with Photoshop, I'm going to spend more time on that little substitute program to see if I can make it work.
Hey, and Bill, a recommendation for cropping, if you're on Windows 10, use the Windows Photo program.
Yeah, I got into a corner with GIMP. I just looked at, you know, photo editing programs on, you know, for free, and GIMP popped up, so I downloaded it. It looks like it's a very powerful program.
It's...
But and then I got down the rabbit hole trying to make it work, and it'd be, two or three trips to the help screen plus a couple online things. I eventually figured it out, but that's what it took. And it certainly isn't Photoshop. You know, Photoshop, draw the box across it, hit enter, and you're done.
Yep.
And that's exactly how this Photo-P worked. It, you know, it works exactly like Photoshop.
Yeah, GIMP is definitely a beast of its own. It comes out of open source, without a doubt. It's a collaboration by a bunch of developers that are not in the same room, that have put it together specifically not to be Photoshop.
Yeah, it looks an awful lot like something you find in Linux.
That's right. It comes right out of that world. But I have to say, I'm really impressed with the power of it, and I've become pretty well versed in it. I've been doing graphics for our meetings to tack on to the podcast and the website. And so, like the graphic I was showing off this morning, I've done all of this in GIMP. And GIMP will do things like allow you to do a perspective of a shot. So you can take a picture and you can make it fit a space. You can do the layers, right? The perspective thing is like what I like to do sometimes. I like to take a computer image or image of like a screen and then put a picture inside that screen like it was on the screen at the time the picture was taken. And so sometimes that screen's skewed because of the perspective of the shot. And so you can change the perspective of your layer to fit within the perspective of that shot. So you can do a lot of cool stuff like that. You can take a picture that's a two-dimensional picture, and you can rotate it 3D in 3D. So you can change the perspective of how that hits the 2D shot. Stuff like that. But all that stuff is available on Photoshop. And so if you have Photoshop experience, it's not applicable in GIMP. You have to learn how to do it all in a GIMP way. I suspect that there are graphic designers out there, or will be graphic designers out there, that are GIMP shops, because they attract graphic designers that had to learn on a budget. And so now those are the tools that they know how to use. We had that experience back in the 90s where all these kids grew up using Apple computers, Macintosh computers. And so when they went out into the workplace, that's what they ended up buying and using, were Macintosh computers. Where's my list? Is there anybody like to chime in on any of those topics?
Yeah. Oh,
I just or have a new problem. Topics.
Sure, Cheryl.
Yeah.
Or mom.
We've both had the same time.
Sorry.
We've had somebody digitize all of our albums, and she sends them to us as a Google Drive, as a Google Drive link. She's keeping it on her computer for 6 months, and I'm going to the shared Google Drive, and when I try to save them to my computer, I grief. They're zipped files. I can't seem to open them easily to do anything with the photos. So that's where my problem is with the photographs. I'd love to edit some of them, but I'm having a real hard time downloading them all to my computer or to a program.
So there are some very sophisticated ways that you guys could be doing this with this person that it sounds like you're not quite doing them that way. So if they're coming to you as zip archives, the best solution I could give you would be to just grab them and get them down to your computer to begin with. So you want to download the zip archives to your computer. I think that's just going to be... It's going to be the simplest workflow for you, given the constraints of the resources that you're using. And so,
Scott.
Yeah.
I've done that. I've pulled some of those files down.
Okay.
My biggest complaint is if I look at them on the Google Drive, I see the icons. I see the actual little miniature icon. But as soon as I bring them down onto the computer and unzip them, I just get a logo, a graphic.
Sure, sure.
I can't see the icon.
This is the first step in doing this. Because what you'd want to do is you want to get those archives down.
Yeah.
And then I would import them into your photo program. And so that's either Windows Photos or Google Photos. Those are the two free ones that I would recommend. And then the organization that you were asking about, Bill, earlier this morning, you can do in either of those programs. So you'll be able to see thumbnails of your photos. But then what's neat about both programs is that it goes a step beyond that. And they use their AI engines to tag faces so you can organize by faces. They pull the dates out of your folder, out of your photos. Of course, these are digital items or albums. These started out as physical photos. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot of metadata that's already missing.
Yeah.
In fact, if you were to organize by date, they're probably going to have the same date on all of them.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah.
And
okay. What were the two programs, Scott?
Well, I was suggesting Microsoft Photos, which comes with Windows 10, and Google Photos, which you can use online. Like, you can stick these back in to Google Photos, and you can do that using the backup and sync program.
Okay.
But if they don't have the metadata, then there's a whole section of stuff there that you're not able to take advantage of automatically. They'll use AI on things like faces and things. And if you have things is interesting. If you have things like pictures of cars, you can put in the word cars and it will bring out a list of, or dogs, it'll bring out a list of dog photos. And it'll organize by faces. So it'll go through and it'll look at all your photos and then give you the opportunity. This happens both in Google Photos and in Microsoft Photos. It gives you the opportunity to label that face with a name. And so then all the faces that are the same will be put under that name. And then you slowly build this inventory of faces. And then as you add more photos to that program, it will make this attempt to pair those faces with the faces that have already been paired.
And Apple does the same thing.
And Apple does the same thing. That's right.
I'll give them a shot.
But what you're lacking and which gets frustrating in these programs is that metadata about dates. The dates have become so important.
Right.
And
well,
so,
in the short term, like there's these photos that we've had digitized are one of the problems, but there's the thousands of other digital photos that we've taken that will have that metadata.
Yeah, yes, Bill, and you can immediately take advantage of that. I'm a horrible example of personal privacy because I've got all the metadata on. You can look at one of my pictures and you can know what camera took the picture. You can know what day, what time I took the picture. You can see where I took the picture. I'm a horrible example of personal privacy. If you looked at any of my pictures, you'd know I was in San Carlos in this trailer taking pictures of myself because I haven't gone anywhere in 6 months.
Are you desperate for someone to visit?
But all that metadata has been turned on my phone because I've learned that I'm less concerned about the privacy implications and more concerned about massaging that metadata. So now Apple, Google, and Microsoft, you can go to a map and you can click on a city and you can see all the pictures you took in that city. Right? You can zoom in on a city's location. I've done that. I've had to go backtracking to figure out where receipts it had taken place from. And I've used my photos to do it because of that metadata. Google sends me a monthly report, which has been really boring the last 6 months, that shows me where all my photos were taken. Right?
So, Scott, did you see the email that I sent to you about the program that was on?
Is it dead or just
on Sunday?
Say that again.
Did you see the email I sent to you about the program that was on 60 Minutes last Sunday? It was about the Shaw Foundation and their use of AI to create these interviews with Holocaust survivors and liberators.
Oh, I'm 60 Minutes. I'm so bad, Judy. I looked at you, what you had written. I'm like, I got to go check that out. And then it was shuffled away. And I never went back to it.
They had interviewed thousands of Holocaust survivors and liberators, and each person was interviewed maybe for like a week at a time and asked many, 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 many questions. And they put this all together, and then you kind of see a hologram, I guess it is, of this person, and you can ask them questions. And they will answer your question if it's in the database. And it was very, very interesting. And I guess some of the museums have this.
This is amazing. This is us living in the future, isn't it?
It really is. Judy,
how
did you find that?
It was on 60 Minutes.
Okay.
Last Sunday, it was the final.
I missed it.
Article on 60 Minutes last week.
I'll go look for it. Thanks.
I'm looking for your email to me. I'll put a link up. Here it is. Look at that. I even put a flag on it saying, come back to this. This sounds great. Okay. Yeah, no, I didn't do the lookup. I'll find the link for it and stick it on the website. It
was not only from the perspective of the Holocaust information that these people were giving and their stories, but also just from the technical aspect. It was really, really interesting.
I don't know if this is appropriate, but it sounds like Holocaust holograms.
Kind of.
Yeah.
I mean,
that would sound about right.
There was one guy that was still alive who was actually able to ask himself a question.
Oh, now we all have to go watch this. That sounds amazing.
It was very interesting. And he asked his hologram person to sing a song, and the hologram person sang the song that meant something to him from his childhood.
So he didn't specify a song. He just said sing a song, and it was the song that he would once sung.
Yes.
That's amazing. I'm going to find the link for that. And I'll
interesting.
I'll stick it on today's meeting.
And they're also this couple, they met at some kind of a conference, and she's now got her own company where she's doing it with just not necessarily Holocaust survivor people, but for, like, you know, if my grandmother was still alive, they would interview her and or just normal people. It was very interesting.
You know,
Scott, fascinated me about it was that they brought these people in and interviewed.
I'm sorry, what happened?
Who was that?
That was my father speaking across my mother's connection. And probably to make it easier for him, they moved something around and disconnected themselves. So he'll be back. He's seen, he watched it.
Good.
Here
Good.
He is. All right, we're ready for your insightful information.
He's left. Hang on. Oh, he's coming back. He and the walker. Here they come.
I just wanted to say it was absolutely amazing to me, the whole presentation that's been described on 60 Minutes. But what I had the most trouble believing was these people who you can imagine are pretty elderly, and they had them in there for a full week, like 8 hours a day.
Right.
It almost sounded like a torture process. I was just amazed that people were willing to do that. But obviously it was something they really cared about. And they were so creative in the way they did this. I don't know whether you call it AI or AR or what, but I mean, they're going to be able to put these questions together. So you can go in and ask these people just about anything. The only thing that caught the guy up was, they said, what's the weather like? He said, well, right. I can't tell you what is weather like today. You know, but you ask anything about his experiences and he could just, you didn't have to worry about the question. It didn't have to be planned or anything.
Oh, that's so awesome. That is like, that's like Superman, the Superman movie where he's talking to his parents as artificial intelligences in the Fortress of Solitude.
It's, exactly.
I mean, it's so sci-fi that we're living right now. I'm sorry, Judy, what were you going
to
comment?
I said it was totally amazing just to, not only to hear their experiences, but the way, like you said, it was presented. So it was very interesting.
Wait,
Scott, I wanted to raise another topic too.
Well, before we leave this, I just wanted to say this pairs with things that are going on in Silicon Valley right now. There are startup services that are wanting to take things like from your loved one, like their Facebook feed, their Twitter feed, their cell phone data, and let artificial intelligence do that sort of thing to it so that as a memorial to you, you have this thing like that about your significant person. Go ahead, Pop. What was it you were going to bring up?
Okay, this is on another topic. I just wondered if you had asked the group about the Navigator and whether anybody else had to think about what it was, and like you removed it from mine. So I think you were kind of curious about where it came from too.
Well, yeah, I never did figure out how you downloaded it and installed it, but there is a web browser called Web Navigator, and Dad recently got it installed somehow. I don't know if you were instructed to do it or if you're on a website that encouraged you to do it, but it was a download. We found it downloaded in your downloads, and I mean, in innocent enough, you would have double-clicked on it, you would have started it to install and gone through an install process. But I don't think you felt like you had done that.
I didn't think I had pursued it at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know how it happened. It just popped up on my computer.
Yeah.
But like you said, I may have done it inadvertently.
Yeah, I mean, it's a number of steps to go through inadvertently. So it's hard to imagine it was done inadvertently unless it was done at the end of instructions. Like either you're reading something telling you step one, step two, step three, or you're talking with support and they're doing this. Other than that, I'm not sure how it would get installed. It looked innocent enough, though. It looked like it was just some other version of Chrome. Now,
thank you. It was kind of acting like that, too.
Thank you for bringing that up, because what's interesting is Jim just sent me an article, not Jim who's with us, but Big Jim sent me an article today. I don't know what's up with Jim, why he doesn't join our groups, because he definitely likes to contribute stuff from time to time. And I'm looking for the topic. I just had it in front of me. But apparently there's been a change made to Windows 10's built-in antivirus. And they've added this feature to the antivirus that allows it to download from the command line. And so this article that he sent me is about the security issues with the antivirus being able to do that, being able to download something from the command line. You could essentially write a script that would use the antivirus as a downloader to download something else. This is one of the ways that I could imagine with Dad's topic of a web browser getting installed without his permission. Something like that is a scenario I could imagine. But it's hard to follow through thinking that these are real concerns, because the security is always in layers, kind of like an onion. And to get to the point where your antivirus is downloading some arbitrary code intentionally to compromise you, you would have to be along the journey to authorize that. And you have to get so deep into the computer that it's hard to imagine that you weren't part of that compromise at some point. You had said okay to something. You had started something. You had, there's some point in that journey where you had implemented this, whether intentionally or non-intentionally. So I'm still, it's an article he sent me this morning that I was reading through, and I think it's, we're waiting to see how big of a concern that is because of this layer. When I say like an onion, security is like an onion. For you to get at anything, you're having to pass through various layers to get to where you can do something. And so though this poses some potential risk, because if you've made it through those top layers, you get down to this layer, well then, yeah, you could use it to get some arbitrary code into your system. But those top layers, if you're able to get through those top layers, you are able to get arbitrary code in your system to begin with. So using this, it's one more vector of security control concern. So I can see the concern, but I'm not sure it's a legitimate concern. And I saw Dad's computer, and it's not clear to either of us whether it was unintentionally installed or whether it was something that he was taking instructions on to install. But it was obviously installed, like it was in uninstall and install programs. So it was removable. The other point that I wanted to make with Jim's article, which is valid, that's the reason I'm making it now, is that the antivirus would still check those files. So the concern of the antivirus downloading arbitrary software, arbitrary data, doesn't have anything to do with its job as an antivirus. As an antivirus, it's still going to scan whatever it downloaded. So if it's a known virus, the antivirus, it might try and download it and immediately stop that process because it's a known virus it's trying to download. So though it's added this feature to it, I'm still having trouble seeing where the level of concern is because it's an antivirus. I guess if you used it to download something, it would have to be something dangerous and new. It'd have to be brand new for it to be able to have a payload. Anyway, that's the point. Is that whatever Dad got installed, this web navigator, it was a Chrome browser. Most all the browsers now are Chrome or their WebKit. WebKit is Apple stuff. So it was a Chrome browser, just like Opera is a Chrome browser, just like Brave is a Chrome browser, just like Chromium is a Chrome browser. And it was in the add remove programs like a legitimate program. It removed like a legitimate program, and it didn't set off the antivirus as being anything malicious. So I'm left with thinking that it got into the system as innocent and accidental as I can imagine. Does that make sense? Anybody have any questions on that? I hear Mom, you're making comments over on your end.
I'm not. It's your dad asking me questions. He has a comment to make.
Yeah, so please do.
One of those. I did have the service on the computer pop up and tell me I should pay attention to this in my computer. Like, I can't think of the term you use for those programs.
You had a notification come up?
Yeah, that's the reason I contacted you, was I was really concerned when I saw it pop up like that.
Oh, interesting. So it was setting off a notification. Well, I thought I had gone in and looked at the antivirus and didn't see any notifications, but maybe we ought to look at it again if you're seeing it with notifications.
Well, I haven't seen it since, and I just saw it the one time, and once it set itself up, then I didn't get the message anymore. It was just the first time I opened it up, apparently.
So maybe the notifications were even innocent notifications. Things like can we use your camera? Can we? Do you want this to be the default web browser? Things of that nature.
Well, I saw more like, what can I think of the term? What that? A protection program. It just came up. You know,
antivirus program?
Yeah, it's kind of like it was flashing. It was doing everything it could to get my attention when I first started the computer.
Interesting. Okay. Well, that, I mean, I didn't see that when I was looking at your computer. And I checked it after we removed it, and I didn't see anything like that. But that's definitely reasons to be concerned.
I haven't had any activity at all on it since you took it out.
Well, awesome.
Thank you, by the way.
You're welcome. go ahead.
A new update for Apple is 13.7. And what it is exposure notifications.
Can you expand on that, Judy?
Well, it says exposure notifications are off in my... If you turn them on, your public health authority can notify you of possible exposure to COVID-19.
Okay.
Your iPhone is not collecting or sharing notification data with anyone.
So they've just added the ability for you to receive information, like your local information and your potential risk of exposure.
And it does say it may not be available in all areas, but it's the 13.7.
That's cool. Well, I look forward to hearing your update. Have you done the update yet?
I did.
Okay.
I have it turned off.
You have it turned off? Are you going to play around with it?
Probably not.
That looks like a hoax.
No.
They have been working on this.
And you can turn on availability alerts and you can receive a notification if exposure notifications are available in your region. So if I get something that says there's a notification, I might turn it on, but right now I'm not.
Oh, I get you. So it's granular enough that it's going to send you a notification if you have reason to be concerned in your local area.
Exactly. That's how I read it. Now, I don't know. I didn't realize when I did the download that that's what it was going to be.
Okay.
So how did you turn it off, Judy?
It's automatically off, as I understand it.
Okay. I have 13.5.1.
No, this is 13.7.
Okay.
And up to 13.7, it was 13.61 was the current operating system.
It's on settings, and the control for it is on settings, and you just go down, and it's called exposure notification, and it looks like the little COVID symbol with the little dots around it. So I don't know. I'm not big on them tracking, so I don't have a lot of location services turned on. So
is this a recommendation that we should upgrade our iPhones?
I'm happy Judy has decided to be a guinea pig with it, because my recommendation's always wait. And find out what happens before you have no reason to be in a hurry to upgrade. But
I just don't like those little dots that say you have an update. You know, I don't like to see those. I want it up to date. So I'm an updater. I update when it comes out.
Microsoft has a language for that. You're a seeker.
You're a seeker.
You're someone that, regardless of whether it'll update automatically or not, you're constantly concerned that it's up to date.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, seekers get themselves in trouble.
We turned off our automatic upgrades on the recommendation of the guy that sold us the iPhones.
Yeah.
And
on either.
Okay, so you don't automatically upgrade. What goes into your decision to upgrade?
When I read about it and see what it is.
So I'm at 13.5.1.
I think you could go to 13.6.1 without concern because it's been in the market for a while now. There was a period of time that we were concerned moving from 12 to 13 because 13 introduced a lot of problems for people. And so I was telling people to hold back for a long time. And, but if you, well, and I don't know, you know, actually, now that I say that, if you're still on 12.9, you may not be in a hurry to go to 13 because some of those problems still exist. But if you're already in 13, then what you want to be is at 13.6.1. And then 13.7, I'm more comfortable going point releases. I don't know if I would have encouraged Judy, but I'd be happy to be available if she had any concerns or questions. I'd let her go ahead and do the update if she was interested. Point releases don't worry me quite as much as full version releases.
And so, I only did it on my phone. I did not do it on my iPad nor on my laptop. So,
and again, my concern is all about headaches. People just haven't. I update stuff all the time, but that's part of the things that I do. That's how I learn, and that's how I help people with their problems. I just don't like people having to be the guinea pigs in these circumstances. Most people just want to use their device.
But Scott, when I go to software update, the only one it gives me is the iOS 13.7 with the opt-in on the COVID.
Yeah.
So how would I get to those other ones?
So you're in this gray area now where you should have updated the 13.61 and you should wait until 13.7 is out for a while because you should always wait a while. You should always wait and get advice.
When it says 13.7 point something?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I typically like to wait till 0.2. But in this case there wasn't a 0.2 in 13. It's all been 0.1 releases, but in the past with the 12.9, the 12, I liked waiting until a 0.2 release before I would recommend to people it's safe to go. Especially this, oh man, this 13 has been such a joke because they had problems and then they released an update and it fixed those problems. Then they released another update and it broke those problems. They brought those problems back and then they released another update. And then the problems that existed from the second update were now broken again in the fourth update. It was like the even ones were fixed and the odd ones were broken. So I've always been somebody that waits until at least the second update's been out. I think you should at least wait for that point update, that point one update before you update. So I guess that'd be my recommendation right now. How long has point seven been out? Did it really release just?
Not long.
Yeah, I'm looking at a document from Apple talking about it 4 days ago. So it's been on for 4 days. I'd give it 2 weeks or at least a 0.1 release.
And I will report back to you all if my iPhone stops working as I expect it to.
But the general advice that I hear from tech people for iOS 13 is the latest release. The latest release. Make sure you have the latest release.
All right.
That's
and
cool.
This doesn't seem like it was really fixing anything.
It was just adding this piece?
Exactly. It could have broken something, but I don't think it was put out as a fix. It was adding this COVID tracking thing. COVID notification. Sorry, that was the wrong word. It wasn't a tracker. It's called exposure notifications.
And it's not hard to imagine that they, because of the situation we're in, that they would just do a release like that. We're not changing anything. We're just adding this feature.
Right. That's what it looks like on my phone. When I look under settings, it added a whole line. It didn't add it to anything. You know, it added a whole category called exposure note. Can you see that? Let's see. I don't know if you can see it or not. Probably not.
I can see your thumb.
Oh, if I turn my camera around, maybe. Let's see.
Nope. Now we're looking at the phone.
We're looking at the wall.
That's yeah. Not, what happened there?
You turn the phone around. Turn the camera around.
Had your thumb over top of the.
Yeah, the first time you had your thumb over the camera, and this time we're looking at a wall.
The wall, and it's behind me. So let's see. I'm on my iPad, and this is on my phone.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Oh yeah, okay, we can almost make that. Okay, slow. You maybe set your phone on a table. Oh, exposure notifications. Oh, there you go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's in your general settings.
Yes. Hold on. This is like multitasking. No, it is not in general.
No, it's not in general.
It's just in the very settings, and then you go down wherever it went.
Judy, move it over a hair. Maybe put it on a table.
That's the problem.
I have one called emergency SOS in there.
It's the one next one. It's right after
Judy. If you set your phone on a table and then cast your pad down to it, it would be much clearer to look at.
Let's look. Okay, it's laying on a table. It's got a note behind it. Okay, so
yeah, there you go. That's perfect.
Okay.
Okay, so if you look here, so it's just settings, and then I'm going down to emergency SOS, and then there's the exposure.
If you go into exposures, okay, it's the availability to get alerts. Turn on exposure notification. That's a button at the top there, that white bar. Is that right?
On that, I don't want to turn them on, but.
But you think that's a button?
Yes.
Okay.
So if I click on it. Okay, see?
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And we're going to cancel that. But I kept this other one on, this availability alert.
Sure, yeah. Anybody that wants to participate could be providing data out there, and if the more the better, yeah.
So... go ahead.
We're running out of time in this meeting, but one of the topics that I have for next week is this idea what is it called? Immunization passport that is being thrown around right now. This idea that there'd be some kind of digital document that would be able to track your immunity passports. That's what they're talking about.
Cool.
And so I've been getting into it, but just off the top of my head, one of the main topics they bring up is how we've got these digital identification systems in place that are trying to be marketed right now. The technology exists, but they're having trouble selling people on them. And so they're looking at the virus as a potential market for selling these digital identification systems. And so it's a little weary to be thinking in these terms. And one of the things that they made very clear is that we don't even understand enough about how this virus works to understand if we can control travel. We can control our decision makings based on something like an immunity passport, like a digital a digital credential that you would carry with you that would verify that you've passed whatever tests or that you've already had it and you're immune, because there's this dystopian idea in the future of this is what would allow us to open back up. And this is a narrative that's being sold on the internet. It's being sold to politicians right now. And I'm going to end this meeting with this thought in your head because I'm not finished with this topic. But this idea is being sold that if we knew somebody had already been infected, if we knew that they tested free of the virus in whatever time period, that that would grant them the ability to travel securely, to be able to interact in circumstances securely without concern of spreading infection. And so this topic, because the technology of digital credentials exists right now, and it's a market that's being built up. They're trying to build this need, this demand for this kind of technology. Then they're exploring it with our virus situation. And what the critics are saying is we don't understand enough about our virus situation right now to even understand if being able to track people like that would result in any of the freedoms that they're trying to sell this idea with. That this would result in you're able to go out to restaurants. That it would result in being able to go to movie theaters and Broadway shows and go back to the office place. We haven't collected enough data. But you'll see it over the next 6 months as they try and sell these ideas.
Two thoughts come to mind. One is a scarlet letter. And the other one is, Bill has said for years that all of us should have a tattoo with a mirror image of our names on our foreheads so that he can remember who you are when he meets you. So different kinds of identification.
Different. He's not into the digital identification at all.
Well, I don't know about that, but when we talk about identifying people and all of that, I don't know, the scarlet letter came up in my brain first. So.
Well, I think that's an interesting topic. I actually have it on hold for the computer club because I don't feel like I'm ready to get deep into it. But I'll put it in your mindset so that we're thinking about it as we're going. I do think that these are the kinds of decisions we're going to be making politically in the next 6 months. What is it that we're going to be in favor of? And right now, it doesn't look like there's enough correlation between knowing that kind of data and how it will, I don't know, what's the best way to express it? Go back to the way things were? I mean, I right now I'm living in a world where I don't feel like we're ever going to go back to the way things are. So I think that's what they're going to try and sell this idea on, is that this will allow us to go back to the way we were. We can go back into movie theaters. We can go back into restaurants without fear. We won't have to be worrying about shutting things down. I think that's going to be the rhetoric that goes along with these kinds of technologies.
I don't think it should be a back to. I think it should be moving into a safer world, and that I don't want to go back to doing something. I want to go forward doing something into a safe environment. So, you know, I like the idea of us making sure that people are safe in their exposures.
I have to agree.
Opening up in a safe way.
I am fully in support of a Star Trek's future where we are organized and we're looking out for each other and currency's been abolished and resources are made available. And I just think, I look at this whole time period as a great reset. And we have an opportunity here to set up how our society is going to move forward, how our community is going to move forward. And we should take advantage of that. We shouldn't get caught up in the minutia of trying to get back to anything. We should be looking at the future and seeing how do we want to pivot this to benefit us all, in my opinion.
Thanks for the topic.
Hey, I got one other topic just because I said Broadway shows. I've got a recommendation. I listened to a podcast called The Daily from the New York Times.
Yes.
And I just listened to the most recent one, and it was about this Broadway for a second. This theatrical production going on in Massachusetts is very interesting. If you guys don't listen to podcasts, this is a great one to listen to. It's the most recent one. Judy's nodding her head because she knows what I'm talking about.
Yesterday.
Yeah, and it really is going to kind of shape the way what happens with this theatrical release is probably going to shape the rules for how theater is going to be done in the future. So that's
what's that called again?
It's a Monday through Friday podcast called The Daily, and it's produced by the New York Times. And it wasn't this morning; it was yesterday, Judy.
I listened to it yesterday.
Okay, so it must have came out yesterday because they have a new one every morning. So it must have been. But it just came into my head when I said Broadway shows because what you learn in this is that the union is contributing guidelines to how this production is going to go forward because they're so concerned about. The union has basically told theaters to shut down because they're not going to cover their health care. They don't want the expense of all these actors getting sick, and so they don't want to put them in potential risk. And so they've made it clear there are no Broadway shows. We're not doing any of this stuff. I suspect that's the reason people like the Late Show with Colbert, why they're still doing the Daily Show. They're still doing their work from home is because of this union issue. They have very strict guidelines in not getting these people sick. But The Daily, I completely recommend it. I recommend it in general. It's a full of really good thought.
It's on my local NPR station. So
you listen to it on the radio.
I do. The old-fashioned radio.
Who knew?
I don't even think I know what that is anymore. Oh, wait, the car.
Car.
Judy, does your radio have little knobs that you can set things with?
Well, yeah. No, it's a new radio.
Oh.
Well, my one here at the house has things I can set, yes. But that's not the – I listen in my car.
There you go.
See you next week, guys.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thanks for being here with me for the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. And if you have computer issues on the internet, I'd like you to get a hold of me, scott@internationalcs.net. And if you enjoyed our meetings, we maintain a blog at sccclub.org. There you can find recordings, audio recordings, and links to YouTube videos, and any news that I thought was relevant, and links from the discussions we have in these meetings. You can also always find us on the YouTube channel. An easy way to get there is youtube.sccclub.org. Hey, you guys have any last-minute things to add before we sign off?
I do.
Go, Bill, go. It's your turn.
I want a round of applause for Scott. I don't think there was one technical difficulty once he pushed go.
Woo! Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yay.
It was in my house, but that's okay. My Google Chrome shut down in the middle of the meeting.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you disappeared for a moment there.
Yeah, you guys were all frozen little letters in a black screen. I got nothing.
Wow. Okay.
All right. Well, I'll see you guys next Saturday, and unless I see you sooner. Fred, do you have anything to add before we sign off?
Nope.
Mom?
Yeah, your dad has something. What did you say?
Put Justin on your list. He wants to join on Saturday mornings.
Well, I appreciate that. I did put him on the list, and he accepted the list, and he's just asleep.
Either that or he's packing because tomorrow he comes to our house.
That's right. That's right. He's moving in downstairs in your guys' place. That's awesome.
In your old bedroom.
Oh, that's got to be weird for him. That's got to be really. That brings back memories from over 30 years ago.
I was going to say, how many years did you guys sneak in and out of houses? I mean, your house or his?
Yeah. Yeah, he's gonna wonder if you thought it was a good idea moving in with you guys. You like, it's like I've moved back in with my parents.
He found us on Craigslist and he didn't know who it was when he called.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Meant to be.
All right. Well, until next Saturday, everybody, tech on.
Tech on.
Bye.
Bye.